Today on How It's Made, urinal cakes, used condoms, and cheese-flavored pants. Then, two brothers who clearly have mental problems will talk about the importance of a zombie movie that's 30 years old. All this and more on this exciting episode of the Quality Time Podcast. Turn the volume up to 11, get strapped in, and get ready for Dawn of the Dead.
Hello, kiddies. It's your old pal, the Crypt Keeper. This is a big shout out to my friends at Quality Time Podcast.
Podcasting.
We're off. Welcome back to the Quality Time Podcast.
Welcome to Cooking with Pants on today. We cook with pants. I'm wearing my corduroys, and what are you wearing?
I just realized that I have to do this second episode, and I am running up on a leaving for a show.
You got your parachute pants on, don't you?
Don't you like that?
I like the way the eye sounds when I walk funny. Corduroys are the funniest things to wear.
Yo, you could start a fire.
In a kitchen, we have fire and funny pants.
My name is Eric Woodworth. Thank you once again for joining us here. And I'm joined, as always, by my blood and my brother, Mr. Jeremy P. Woodworth. Jeremy, how are you doing, sir?
I'm just going to ignore you.
Okay, I'm sorry. Who's joining us on the show?
It's me, Tom Savini.
Oh, Tom Savini. Very straight
laced. Yeah, whatever. I'm an actor. I ignore people when you meet me, okay?
That's great. Man, all right, cool.
I'll just turn my head to the side while you talk, wait for you to be done, and maybe you buy something or get the fuck away from my table. I'm Tom Savini.
Tom Savini's not very friendly is what you're getting at.
No,
from the
whatever.
Shows.
Just keep moving if you're not going to buy something.
Now,
if you buy one of my busts of the Creature from the Black Lagoon, I'll probably shine your knob.
Interesting story. So Tom Savini, who actually has a role in our movie tonight, Dawn of the Dead, 1978, did the special effects for many a movie. Creepshow, he has a long laundry list
of
Tom movies.
Was handed off to Greg Nicotero.
Yeah, well, he basically trained Greg Nicotero, but it's funny, Savini was actually inspired because he was a photographer in the Vietnam War, and basically he just wanted to make special effects that looked like the actual horrors that he saw overseas.
Yep. And then he turned into the guy from Clerks.
That is true.
I'm not supposed to be here. So sounds exactly like him.
That's a solid. So
he should really play Tom Savini's character as a younger Tom Savini.
So
Now, of course, the first time I met Tom Savini, I think I turned him off the first time when he had Sex Machine on the table with him, and a woman was asking about him, and I said something in a bad tone, like, can you put it on and make it like it was a real penis? And he just kind of, like, turned his head, like, get the fuck out of here.
Not going to make eye contact with you.
Everybody says that Tom Savini kind of acts like a jerk because he just acts like he doesn't want to see you, doesn't want to be there. And that's just the way he comes off, so either way.
But I bet you he's a really nice guy,
I've heard other people that they'll play pool with him and they say he's great to be around, but sometimes some people are a little standoffish, not the real right brained love to be around all the time.
Hey, that happens though. Some people are just they're not fucking men of the people.
It's because he went to Vietnam and he always has to go back to the bathroom. She has to shoot up some heroin just like Randy Quaid in The Wildlife, and like, you guys want some beers in the fridge and you guys come back here. Don't you dare call it nom, motherfucker. You want to fry some Hueys? You're gonna go to Nicaragua or
Nicaragua
or Guatemala. You won't be flying Hueys and having fun, little bastard kids. I'm going to do some heroin now.
So, Jeremy, you made a special song for us this week. Would you like to intro it in any way, shape, or form?
This is just another happy song, a song that just keeps me going when I feel bad some days. You know, it's kind of close to 99% true.
Okay, so, well, without further ado, here's Jeremy's Song of the Week.
I have sores all over my body. I have sores, they make me really nuts. They make me itch 24 hours now, and they make me wanna die. Sores over my body, they go pretty much anywhere. Who wants a giant skin flake? Bring it to you, but I wanna die. It makes me hate everyone. It makes me hate when they look at me. I wanna maybe kill somebody, but I really wanna die. Die, 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 die. Oh yeah, I think it's time to itch again. Oh yeah, makes me wanna die. Oh, it really, really itches. It makes me hate everyone. But I know it's nobody's fault except maybe God. And I hate him too.
Wait, there's more?
So, you know, that kind of brings
okay,
me
okay, that was
you
know. Good. That was good.
I call it the psoriasis song.
Honestly, your psoriasis looks better than normal today, Jeremy.
And the great thing about it, when you start, you know, really getting out in the sun, it just kind of brings back that feeling of real skin that makes you itch even more.
That's good. That's a good
it's
bit.
Like, wow, I almost feel human. Except the itching, it's worse. You know, I think there's that fine line between being full crocodile man and normal skin. So
it makes sense. I like that. All right. Cool.
It's like you either be a full carny or a normal person.
There's, okay. Well, Jeremy, you're right. You're right. You're teetering the line right now.
I hate to say 20 years ago when I didn't treat it as well, I almost could get 1 to 2 inch size flakes.
Jesus
that were
Christ.
So thick. And I would like, it's like, wow, this is probably the biggest flake that has ever been off my body. And it was, you know, certain levels of taking care of yourself. But at least my only body was only covered maybe 20% at that time.
Okay. Well, hey, so. Listen, you're really turning the corner now. That's the important part.
And the worst part is if you ever put it in somebody's potato chips or something, like, oh my gosh, this isn't a potato chip. But it's still crunchy.
Oh,
well, ways of getting back at people. So.
These are pillows. So, Jeremy, one thing I haven't talked about on the show, but a couple weeks back, I was at Wendy Townsend's roast.
Townsend.
Former guest on the show, new 98 Rock. She has the nights now, 8 to 11.
Please tell me she might come back on so she can actually hear my song.
No, she's down to come back on. Yeah, she's
so.
Going to come. She's going to come.
Ooh,
so,
she's going to come.
So, Wendy, I was at her roast. I said some fucking horrible things about all the people that I love in this world that were at the show. there was one joke I didn't get a chance to say, and it was about Brian Preston, who I do the show Laugh Finder with. Shout outs, Laugh Finder. You should check us out. It's a much more popular podcast than ours. But this Brian Preston was there, and I wrote a joke for him that I didn't say. And I the joke was that Brian Preston looks like if Chris Restivo tried to draw Jason Momoa, the guy who plays Aquaman. So
right,
that was
well,
my
yeah. Oh, in the new no, that's I'm thinking of Deep.
But
the deep.
I said some good jokes about Wendy. I told Wendy, I was like, Wendy's on 98 Rock. She's doing a lot of big things. And you know what? She doesn't get the credit she deserves for her pussy doing all those Arby's commercials starring in, you know. Because her pussy looks like roast beef. That was the joke.
Yes.
And then I also...
I almost understood that.
I did a whole bunch of Wendy's pussy jokes. I said, Wendy's pussy is so fucking large that every 30 minutes a lifeguard says it's Adult Swim only. And then... And then I did one. I did a joke that said, Wendy's pussy is so sad, large, and lonely that Robin Williams hung himself in it. And that got a big pop. So she's a beautiful woman. I love her to death.
Gosh.
The best joke against me, though, was Candace Saunders. And Candace Saunders, shout outs, great comedian. She goes, Eric Woodworth looks like every white woman that calls the police on black people for barbecuing. And when she did that, I took my phone out of my pocket. I was like, yep, black hair, gold watch. And I just started describing her and shit like that.
And I just wanted to say, thank you, Candace, for making that joke about Eric and not me, because of course I did call the cops when I saw you at the Metallica show.
That is a true
Why
story.
Why is there a black woman
that
here?
That is a true story.
Yeah.
So the last, I will tell you, there was a little bit of controversy. Now, near the end of the show, a comedian named Walker Hayes showed up, and Walker Hayes is a very, very beautiful woman and comedian. She lives in New York a lot now, but she hails from the Baltimore area. And she was invited to be part of the dais, but she said she couldn't make it. But she ended up showing up. And when she showed up, she just put herself on the dais, and it was Wendy's turn to go. This is the end of the show. She shows up, and she starts heckling Wendy. Wendy's not taking it good, because Wendy's also a couple of fucking wine spritzers deep into the night, and she's a little bit pissed.
How drunk does Wendy have to be before she gets pissed off and starts destroying tables?
Two BLs. That's it. Two Bud Lights. That's all it takes. So she's Walker says something where Wendy turns around and she's like, you fucking bitch, you think you just fucking show up here fucking late and then fucking heckle me? Go fuck yourself. And she said something back that I don't remember the joke, but it was good, and everybody started fucking laughing. And then you could see it in Wendy's eyes. It's fury right now. It's just it's fucking red. And she turns back around to look, and then Tommy, who's sitting right next to Walker, goes, it was a good bit. Right. And Wendy, in her fury moment, takes a full glass of water and fucking splashes it into Tommy's face. And I don't know if you know about Tommy and Tsimbazo. He's not the person to fuck with in any situation. Because literally the second it happened, I watched his face go, and like, it was that part in Kill Bill. It's like, weep, 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 like that. Oh my God. I thought he was going to fucking murder Wendy, right? But he handled it with poise and grace and didn't do anything. And Wendy finished her set. But it was definitely a tense moment, to say the least.
Baltimore comedy, always with fresh drama.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But no,
only every once in a while somebody gets beaten up.
Honest to God, I fucking loved this roast so much. It was cathartic. I'm glad that there's no footage that exists from it, because we said fucking horrible things about each other. And it's really what comedy should be, and I fucking loved it to death. So, Jeremy, are we ready to get back into tonight's topic?
Yeah. Let's just say, the greatest buddy film of all time.
Is it the greatest one?
Of course.
That's correct.
I wouldn't say, because it didn't have the greatest story or drama, but they're both pretty much normal cops and they like shooting zombies together, so.
Okay, fair enough. I like
and one
it.
Of the buddies dies.
So we're going over 1978's Dawn of the Dead. If you're joining us again, listeners, last week, basically what happens is the world's overrun by zombies. This is a defining movie of the zombie genre, directed by George A. Romero, and special effects by Tom Savini. A ragtag group of two SWAT team officers, a news reporter lady, and a guy who flies the helicopter for the news station team up. They have now entered a shopping mall and are trying to lock it down and make it their own personal Shangri-La. Lots of good stuff. So if you're just tuning in, maybe go back to episode one and catch up, because you're going to be a child that walks into the middle of this movie. The last thing that we went over, the last thing that we went over was that they're basically trying to get some supplies from a department store. They've left a wheelbarrow full of them, but now they are locked back in said department store.
The important things, like a TV.
Like a TV and some chocolate. You know, the necessities. And that brings us to the present now, where we are in this movie. So, Dawn of the Dead. The boys have left. As you remember, there's a Hare Krishna zombie that is headed up towards Fran that they decided to take a different path than the other ones. So Fran, unarmed and alone upstairs, is in dire need of some help. But she doesn't know that, and neither does anybody else.
Is this the scene where we find out that Matt Frewer is also going to be a zombie and he's going to die? He's going to die soon.
I think so. No.
Okay. And then he calls the black guy Shaq.
That is true. That is true. Okay, accurate. So
this is the 78 version.
So in the department store, that Roger Flyboy gets, basically they're all, I'm sorry, they're running through the department store, and all of a sudden a zombie goes and attacks Roger as they run by and tackles him.
They name the zombie.
I don't know his name. Is there a special name for the zombie? The screwdriver zombie?
Screwdriver zombie. Guess his name.
I don't know.
His name is John Harrison.
Okay, good.
Do you know why he's famous?
Because he dies in this movie?
Because not only did he do the soundtrack to Creepshow,
okay,
he also directed Tales from the Dark Side, and also when the mummy part in the lot 249, when the zombie is walking through the room, you have the television scene from Dawn of the Dead where he's attacking him in the scene because he's the director. So.
Oh, I didn't know that. Well, little known facts. Look at that.
Now, when I met John Harrison, he's like, he made a point. He's like, look, I do my own original music. I don't do copies of things. I don't do like covers. And I was like, hey, remember that scene in Creepshow when you do the Camp Town Races? Meow, 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 meow. Camp Town Races, sing this song.
Doo-dah,
and he was like, oh, you're the only person that's ever mentioned that. I was like, yeah, man, it's like the death metal version of Camp Town Races. So.
That's good. That's a good bit.
He's
man.
A very cool guy.
So Roger gets attacked by one of these zombies, which, all right, listen, it's a pretty cool scene. He basically takes a screwdriver and then jams it into its ear. Big pool of blood comes out. But you want to know what makes no sense about this, Jeremy? They're in the department store. They haven't found the zombie until now. It's been lurking this whole time.
He's standing there like a mannequin, I guess, until he attacks.
So that doesn't make sense. But on top of that, there has to be at least one more zombie in there, right? Like, where's the other zombie that turned that guy into a fucking zombie, right?
Well, he got away. He got into the pennies, but he'd already been bit.
He locked it up. He doesn't have the keys. It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make sense that he'd stand there like a mannequin for more than a second. So.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. So that's a pretty cool scene. They go downstairs and they get ready to pull the same trick, the okey-doke again. And Flyboy provides them with some information.
What do we do? Let him know we're here.
This time, fly boy, how about it?
Flyboy is so white that he can't do a woohoo. He does a whoopee.
Whoopee!
Oh,
that's us. Every time he busts, he goes, whoopee!
It's going to take 2 days before Fran cucks every single one of these guys. Like, yep. Good thing she's already pregnant.
So, meanwhile, while this is all going down, the Hare Krishna zombie starts making its way slowly upstairs towards Fran, and the boys put their plan into move.
Can I say how much better this scene would have been if it was all three zombies, being one Jehovah's Witness, one Hare Krishna, and maybe one
That's
other religion? No! Tries to attack her with a watchtower, so... Yeah.
So Flyboy has the schematics that he pulled from one of the maintenance rooms, and he gives this.
I've been thinking, maybe we got a good thing going here. Maybe we shouldn't be in such a hurry to leave.
Oh, man.
If we can get back up there without them catching on, we can hold up for a while. At least long enough to catch a breath. Check out the radio. See what's happening.
Oh, man.
Some kind of passageway over the tops of these stores. I don't know if it's just heating ducts or some kind of access. I saw it on a map.
Mm-hmm. It's on a map.
Let's go.
So luckily, Flyboy, with his little schematics that he pulled, they find an air duct that
so
they're able to...
So fucking happy with himself looking on a map.
Look at these air ducts. Have you ever heard of them?
As long as we can keep the religious zombies from attacking our woman, we'll be all right.
Yes. So the boys access the air ducts, but Fran is now in dire need of some help, and she can't seem to hold a single door shut from a very weak zombie. It makes no sense. This is an embarrassment, right? Like, how easy is it to just hold your foot in front of a door so that something that's not as strong as a regular human can't open it?
And she had boxes of Spam to actually hold the door
shut. Oh, yeah. So she was like, oh, my foot can't do this. Maybe if I pull these four boxes of Spam in front of it, that'll save us. This dumb bitch. Like, God damn it. It pisses me off, actually.
I'm kind of torn as to, I haven't seen it in a long time, but does the zombie actually attack her with the tambourine in hand, or does he actually let loose with the tambourine?
The tambourine is attached to the side.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's attached
so it's not
to
like
the side.
It's not like the other zombie holding the M16 from the rest of the movie.
So it easily pushes the four boxes of Spam, which she thought was a fucking great idea to block the door. She grabs a flare and uses it to keep it at bay because apparently zombies don't like light, but they walk around outdoors all day long. Whatever.
Burnt.
Oh, fire. Oh, gosh.
The same as the remake of Night of the Living Dead.
So she uses the flare to keep it at bay. She tries to escape up the ladder, but it grabs a hold of her leg. Luckily, the boys get there just in time to end this thing's life. And they do it quietly. They realize that gunshots are going to draw more. They fucking beat it to death in the face. So, Franny is legitimately traumatized and is not listening to all the cool stuff the boys got. They're not blowing it. She's not like, oh, I'm glad we risked my life for a fucking TV. It's not like the Eagles are playing this weekend.
That's when they decide to tie her to the couch.
Yeah, yeah. I like it because the boys, you'll see a lot of times the boys are all in agreement and they're like, this dumb bitch doesn't need to know anything. God damn it. They just, they treat her like a total piece of shit through this whole movie.
Hey, when you stop being comatose, you should have a good time. We got great stuff. Just cry over there in your fetal position and come back to us when you're back with us.
So they chat about some things, but then they find out that Franny is pregnant and Peter poses this question.
She all right? She looks blown.
What do you expect?
No, I mean she really looks sick. Confirmation now on physically.
Early reports I gave pregnant. To you
that communications with Detroit have been knocked out, along with Atlanta, Boston.
Well, how far along?
And
3.5-4 months.
Jesus. And New York City.
Steve knew we should try to get moving.
We can deal with it.
Yeah, but maybe she needs a doctor or something. Atlanta,
we can deal with it. Boston, doesn't change a thing.
Of Philadelphia and
you want to get rid of it?
Have reportedly been
huh?
knocked out.
Do you want to abort it? It's not too late, and I know how.
He pulls out this big old coat hanger that just he carries around for all of his makeshift abortions. Which I think is funny that they pose the question of aborting this child. They don't ask her at all. They're like, you just want to kill this fucking kid or what? I mean, we don't need to have another kid around here.
Don't think of what a disturbing scene is like, hey, I know how to do abortions. Like, oh, thanks. That's great to know.
I have been, me in the Peter family, we've been doing abortions since 1968. I would have had 8 brothers. Instead, I have 2. And you know what the 2 are? One's a ball player, and the other one is a firefighter. So
I never put 2 and 2 together until today. It was like, you have man-on-man relations. You kill unborn children. It's like, guy. He was ready to kill him in the other movie. He's talking bad about abortion in this movie.
Yeah, in the remake, he plays the televangelist who says, you create abortions.
And you know, the new thing about the new movie, both of his legs are cut off because he has to be sitting down when he does that scene.
That is true. So, yeah. That is a good bit. That's a good bit. So they all seem to want to stay except for Fran. She wants to leave. Now, the TV is left on, and this little bit plays on the TV because they're still broadcasting from a single station.
The normal question, the first question is always, are these cannibals? No, they are not cannibals. Cannibalism, in the true sense of the word, implies an interspecies activity. These creatures cannot be considered human. They prey on humans. They do not prey on each other. That's the difference. They attack and they feed only on warm human flesh. Intelligence, seemingly little or no reasoning power, but basic skills remain are more remembered behaviors from normal life. There are reports of these creatures using tools, but even these actions are the most primitive. The use of external articles as bludgeons and so forth. I might point out to you that even animals will adopt the basic use of tools in this manner. These creatures are nothing but pure motorized instinct. Their only drive is for food, the food that sustains them. We must not be lulled by the concept that these are our family members or our friends. They are not. They will not respond to such emotions. They must be destroyed on sight.
But what if they can still call up Aunt Tilda and talk on the phone? Aunt Tilda!
I also like that this expert that they bring on has an eye patch. Like, he looks like he's about to take down James Bond at any moment, right? When I'm not telling the world about zombies, I'm trying to figure out how to stop Mission Impossible.
Now, you can try to hug your loved one zombie, but they'll probably take a bite out of your shoulder. And then that's not going to be good.
So,
unless you're a Blackula as well.
Next, the boys plan on locking down the mall. Now, there's a bunch of tractor trailers that they plan to hotwire and then use them to block, like, the main entrances to the mall, so that a bunch of them can't build up behind it and break down the door. Fran stops them before they're about to go out because she's still not part of the decision-making process, and she mentions, "I get a vote. Susan B. Anthony fought for my right to be able to choose what happens in the zombie apocalypse. Also, I'm not your fucking mother." So she kind of lays down the laws to the boys. They do nothing to calm her down. But she also says, "I need to learn how to fly that chopper in case anything happens to Steven. It only makes sense." So Steven, who keeps trying to say, "Shut up, lady," like this. Nope. But luckily, Peter comes in, the voice of reason. You're like, "She's right. We got to teach her this bitch how to fly." So they have a pilot in training. Now, next is the montage of them.
And she also asked for a gun.
She wants to know how to use the gun, and they give her a gun, and she's already an instant better shot than Flyboy.
The worst.
So, next is the montage of them locking down the prison. It's also good to mention that this whole score is done by the band Goblin. So, great score by Goblin.
Is it Argento's band?
Yeah, yeah. This is dun 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 dun.
Not to be confused with Argent of Hold Your Head Up High.
So they land the chopper outside of the shopping mall and drop by some tractor trailers, and they start hot wiring these things. The first one goes pretty easy. Roger seems too overly confident, though, and it's a confidence that will be his undoing, ultimately.
I actually know the words to the song, which is something like, "Driving trucks in the zombie apocalypse. Gonna hotwire some so we cover the inches to our mall."
So as they're hotwiring, they They get the first one. So they park the first one in front of the doors, and it goes off without a hitch. Peter comes back in, and they basically... Peter drives Roger back to the trucks to go hotwire the next one. But this one doesn't go nearly as smoothly. While he's hotwiring this truck, a bunch of fucking walkers roll up on him, and shit gets pretty hectic. He's kind of overpowered by a zombie that's now in the fucking cab of the car with him.
At least 110-pound
female. 110-pound woman who's just holding him down, putting his fingers in his mouth, and Peter pulls back up to help Roger. So Peter is able to shoot it.
And gets a Dupree right in the face, like what's her name in Hateful Eight.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, just gets covered in fucking zombie glue all over his face.
Covered with Channing Tatum's fleshless head now. So,
Peter shoots it, and basically Roger gets back up and grabs a handgun, which seems like was something he could have done for everything that's happening right here. He's struggling with a giant rifle that doesn't work. He has a handgun on him that he could have shot this one and the one behind him, but ultimately ends up just killing the one behind him. And now he's just riding on cloud nine. He's fucking very excited that they're kicking ass right now.
We got this, man. We got this by the ass.
Roger! Come on, man. Get your head together. We got a lot of work to do.
Can I say how bad this is and how close it is to, 28 Days Later, where the guy just, looks up and gets one drop of blood in his eyes, and then he's done, oh, shit. One drop.
Yeah. So, Roger's losing it a little bit when he's driving back with this next truck. He's, running over the dead, and he's laughing constantly. He pulls up to block the next entrance, but this time there's a lot more of the horde to deal with. Roger almost gets bit on, three separate occasions when he's trying to make this transfer from truck to truck here. As he's driving away, he realizes that he fucked up big time.
Oh, Jesus, what? My bag! I left my goddamn bag in the
other
truck!
All right, Trooper, you better screw your head on.
Yeah, come on. Let's go!
I mean it, man! Now, you're not just playing with your life, you're playing with mine. Now, are you straight?
Yeah.
Did you have to do the whole kilo of cocaine before we did this?
He did. He really did.
I hate to say that, the reason the bikers probably do great is because, zombies can't bite through a good cowhide leather jacket.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to bite through leathers, right?
Yeah. So. And I'm thinking more than that in the good zombie apocalypse. I'm wearing a full Kerry Livgren leather jacket with the big nails sticking out all along
the side of
it.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense, right?
Which not only is good against biting, but also you shove them in the side of their face with like a sideways action Wolverine or something.
You know where I think a zombie apocalypse could never happen? The Middle Ages. Do you imagine just knights walking around and they're just like, well, I'm just going to walk into the zombie horde with a sword because they can't bite me through any part of what I'm wearing.
Even 10 of them on you, unless they find a weak spot, you're still got a good fighting chance.
That's the other thing about the zombie apocalypse I never understood. There's no way zombies overtake everything when there's just a contingency of tanks that just roll around. You just drive over them night and day, and they're dead. They can't stop you.
I already know the new season of Walking Dead, because they're going to fight the biggest zombie horde of all. But it's everybody is gonna be underneath a dumpster to protect themselves.
We're safe underneath this dumpster. Don't worry.
Just the whole tank army of dumpsters to save their lives. So
they head back to go get the bag this time, but Roger is not so lucky. Roger gets a chunk taken out of his arm and his leg. He's basically got a death sentence now. But they are able to block the rest of the entrances, but Roger's as good as fucked. But now phase two has started, and it's locking down the mall so they can't get back in. They go they go into the gun store, which they had seen from the air ducts earlier, and go to load up on guns and ammunition, which has some very awkward music that's playing in the background. some African fucking Swahili.
I can't
that's
remember.
Playing.
I know I've heard this in another movie since then. I can't remember what it was.
So Ken Foree picks up a fucking badass rifle and drops this line.
Is
here.
That?
Ain't it a crime?
What?
The only person who could ever mess with this gun would be the sucker with the bread to buy it.
I like this music in the background.
Just wait out there, sissies. We're coming.
By the way, as a gun shop owner, do you just play this all day in their store and you're just like, this is what I like to listen to?
And we're ready.
This is what Axl Rose listens to every day because it's jungle music.
Welcome to the jungle. Yes. We've got fun and games. So
the thing that bothered me more than anything in this movie is like, you guys already have M16s, at least one of you still does, and you go to bolt action.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
Oh my gosh.
But it's such a good gun that you can't miss with it.
No,
know?
Ever go either full auto or at least semi-auto.
So
I'll take a Remington semi-auto any day.
So they patch up Roger, and now Peter is wheeling him around in a wheelbarrow as they're just fucking armed to the teeth and go on a killing spree within the mall. Their objective is to lock the front doors on each end of the mall and that are now blocked with trucks so that, you know, whatever people can get past the truck can't get into the mall. They decide to hotwire a car in the meantime. Roger gets a fucking gnarly thumb pushed into his fucking leg wound, which is pretty cool. But after some close calls and lots of fucking headshots, they're able to hotwire this car. They lock the doors and the trucks in front of them are there so that the zombies can't build up and break it down. The mall is theirs.
And once they start driving, they are Farfugnugan.
Yeah, they are.
The Volkswagen Scirocco, otherwise known as the Volkswagen Rabbit back in the day.
So they spend the rest of the day killing what's left over inside, and basically they have their own personal kingdom at this point. So Roger, though, is slowly dying. He's not doing fucking good. As we know, a bite from a zombie fucking burns you up, gets you sick, and you die.
He's looking like Matt Frewer on a good day.
Yeah, he's not looking great. Not looking great. The gang decides to wall off the hallway where the entrance is to their little secret hideout because they're worried that if anybody ever comes to check this place out, they don't even want them to know that they're up there. So Fran struggles with morning sickness during this part, and the boys start cleaning up all the dead bodies and putting them into a freezer within the mall. In general, they live it up. It's shopping to their heart's content, all the food and amenities they could possibly want. There's even a fun arcade montage scene where they're playing the shittiest games that have ever been made.
The best games 78 could give you.
Yeah, yeah. I think they're playing the Star Trek game at one point. There's definitely the really shitty Star Trek game.
It wasn't really Star Trek, but it was a takeoff on Star Trek that was pretty good for its day. Oh my gosh, I played the fuck out of that. Dude, that was at our first church when we were at a hotel.
Oh yeah?
And my whole church going experience is like, can't wait till church is over so I can play this video game.
Okay.
Oh, I played at least 50 times.
Okay. And Roger is playing probably the shittiest Atari like screen game where it's just like this racing game.
It's like an actual 3D racetrack that's like magnified on the screen. That's not even like an actual video computer. It's actual 3D.
Yeah, yeah. It looks like it's very low tech arcade machine that he's playing.
Like the old days before they even had a TV in a thing. There was like, you know, Penny Arcade something.
But while all this is happening,
they also had the shoot 'em up cowboy game, which was an early arcade. Maybe an Atari with little pixels of a cowboy with a gun in his hand with a cactus.
Yeah, that
in the
was
middle.
A good one, man. That's a good game. It's a good game. Good bit.
It was garbage, but we played it because there was nothing else to play. Otherwise, look at that square. That's a ball. That's part of Pong.
So, They basically have the whole place to themselves. The four of them sit on the stand and overlook the mall, all dressed to the nines with all the freshest fashion, and they start talking
Peter
about the zombies. Wearing a fucking pimp coat with no pussy except for this weird pregnant lady that he could possibly bang.
Except they're all getting cocked out.
And he drops this little liner here.
They're after us. They know we're still in here.
They're after the place. They don't know why. They just remember that they want to be in here.
What the hell are they?
They're us, that's all. There's no more room in hell.
What?
This is something my granddaddy used to tell us. You know Makumba?
Oh, yeah, of course I know Makumba.
Granddad used to tell us, when there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk the earth.
Whoa!
Of course, Makumba. Here it comes.
Jeremy Woodworth, exclusive.
What the hell is full? The dead will walk the earth.
When hell is full,
the dead will walk the earth.
Good solo.
The hell is full. The devil off the earth.
Good one, Jer. I liked it.
I liked it with just my voice that you couldn't even understand with the weird
little
filters
background.
I love. Because that's what the death metal sounds like.
So when there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk the earth. Which Ken Forey, of course, says again in the remake of this film when he plays the televangelist.
I'm
going
to try to sell this song to Justin Bieber later. So.
You think so? You think the Biebs will want this?
Yeah,
you think that'll
much.
Be his jam right there?
That'll be his next baby.
Roger is still slowly dying. They're giving him morphine and stuff to ease it a little bit. The other Steven and Fran leave the room and leave Peter and Roger alone, and they have this little heart to heart.
Take care of me, won't you, Peter?
Hey. Oscar moment.
You take care of me when I go.
Just try to get some sleep, man. Save your strength.
I don't want to be walking around like that. Peter. Peter!
Yeah, I'm here, man.
Don't do it to be sure. I am coming back. I'm gonna try not to. I'm gonna try not to come back. I'm gonna try.
This was exactly the same at the end of Bohemian Rhapsody when Freddie Mercury died of AIDS and they shot him in the head to make sure he wouldn't come back.
So moments later, the rest of the gang is watching TV in the other room, and it's the same pundit with the fucking eye patch who's talking. When all of a sudden, Roger rises up from the sheets. He's gone full zombie, and Peter draws his handgun and puts an end to him.
We've got to remain rational.
You know, he could have hit him with a headbutt and made a lot less mess in the room, but either way.
So they bury Roger in a nice, peaceful garden near the wishing well downstairs, which I always find very funny. They were like, yeah, this is how he wanted to go, right next to his favorite wishing well. So next we see Flyboy propose to Franny. This is actually a deleted scene from the original cut. She refuses to marry him, says it wouldn't be real. And we see Franny getting more and more pregnant as time lapses here. The little palace they've set up at the top of the mall is filled with all the guns and types of shit you could possibly need. The TV broadcasts have stopped. It seems like it's just them left in the world. So Franny learns how to fly, but someone is watching them. It's a local marauding biker gang who sees them flying the helicopter.
Wow. Must get in through the roof.
Son of a bitch.
They got trucks blocking all the entrances. Look at that.
Yeah, trucks. No sweat.
Now, what do you think? Should we hit him now or tonight?
Tonight.
And I like that he flips out. That little click that you heard was like a switchblade, but it's actually a little comb that he uses to comb his mustache. It's very strong. Yes. Very strong move by Tom Savini there. So night falls, and they get a little message on the radio from the Raiders outside.
Okay, listen. How many you got up there anyway? Look, there's three of us.
There's not three of them. There's like 50 of them.
Well, if there's only three of them.
Who says?
Why don't you? Quiet.
I think we should talk.
Jesus Christ, shut up and listen.
Hey, you in the mall, listen.
We don't like people that don't share. You just fucked up real bad.
Now for the true horror.
Come on, let's go.
Bikers in a zombie film.
So. The bikers start coming up, and it is a fucking caravan of these motherfuckers that roll up
and you know,
deep.
You know who the mall belongs to now?
Who's that?
It belongs to Negan.
To Negan. Yep. This is Negan's mall.
Yes.
So
they are all Negan.
The Marauders stock up, and they start to invade the mall. There's about 50 of them on bikes and other vehicles. Fully Mad Max-style assault. Flyboy and Peter decide to go downstairs and lock all the gates to the...
All of them have leisure vans to have sex in.
Yes.
With carpeting in the back.
They start to lock all the gates to the store so that they can't steal everything. The bikers break in and let a horde of zombies in behind them. The boys decide that the best way to deal with this is to just let them loot and fight it out with the horde. The gang comes in and starts shooting, store locks open to gain access, and it's just total mayhem within the mall.
And can I say my favorite gun of the film, the Tommy gun?
Yeah, yeah. The one guy has a Tommy gun.
And it's at least 100-round
barrel, dude.
That fucker.
So the thugs seem to be having fun with this, though. They actually grab pies and they start throwing pies at the walkers. They're spraying them with seltzer and stuff. They're just having the time of their lives.
The full zombie apocalypse experience.
Yeah.
Oh.
So Flyboy, though, breaks ranks. He's seen enough, and these douchebags are fucking everything up.
Towers. They took it.
What did they do to this soundtrack? This is not the original. Oh my gosh.
That's the joy of Goblin right there. That's
that was
good
not
Goblin.
The original music. Oh my gosh.
So that's from the extended cut. That's the
call
audio.
Me! I'm alive! Call me! Where I go into the mall?
So Flyboy ends up shooting the first one, and now the bikers have been alerted to the human presence that's within there.
Shoots him off his double-seater bike.
Peter's not happy that he broke rank, but now they have a fucking war on their hands, and the bikers are doing a good job of killing the dead to get to the living.
One of my biggest losses in life is all nostalgia. It's all very sentimental. I got to see Alien in Ocean City in 1980 or 79.
Okay.
And the guy that ran the booth gave me a section of movie, which I didn't even know was until like 85 when I saw it. And it was this fight scene from Dawn of the Dead on actual 35mm.
Oh, you still have that? Or?
Yeah, it got burned up in the house.
Oh, fuck. That sucks.
If I had that now, every fucking frame, dude, you recognize it because you know where it's from. So.
That's really badass. That's cool.
Good times.
So there is a cool scene of the bikers doing a good job of killing the dead here. Tom Savini does the fucking machete shot to the one guy who is a very, it's an iconic kill of the movie.
Can we talk about the most important thing that you're fighting?
What's that?
You want to check your blood pressure.
Yeah, there's this one guy who can't stop checking his fucking blood pressure. The bikers are like, hey, dude, this maybe isn't the time to do that. He was like, respect that. That makes sense. All right, I'm not gonna do this. So they talk him out of it, but he's not done. And we'll get back to him in just a moment. Now, Flyboy, he's clearly overwhelmed, and he takes off into the department store and then gets to the elevator of the department store so he can access the air duct. But somebody hits the button and the thing goes down. He can't reach it. Some of those fucking douchebags. Meanwhile, Peter is already shooting people left and right, and he retreats into a finds a drop ladder that he's set up to get back into the air ducts. And Tom Savini's character sees him crawl up into the air ducts and drops this little line right here.
I see you,
Chocolate Man.
I see you, Chocolate Man. All right. That's honestly, of all racial slurs that you could throw out at that point, that's probably the nicest coming from a white supremacist biker, right?
Like, he's a very PC biker. He wouldn't use the N-word, Chocolate Man. So
he was like, I like it. He was like, I see you. And then Ken Forey looks at him. He was just like, Chocolate Man.
It's good to know that bikers aren't racist and would never say such things.
Yeah,
but I think my other favorite scene is when they're pillaging and they realize, oh gosh, these TVs aren't good anymore because they're not digital.
Oh, God, what a piece of shit. So,
yeah.
Now, Flyboy, some bikers come into the elevator. They sense that he's up there, and they start shooting through the thing. So Flyboy is now shot through the shoulder and not mortally wounded, but not doing great. Now, from the air ducts, Peter is crawling around, and he's poking out through other little like openings in the air duct, and he's shooting people and doing a fucking real great job. He ends up killing Tom Savini by shooting him. One of the other bikers uses a fucking like line like Tarzan and drops down with a sledgehammer, and he's doing some fucking cool killing and shit. Then there's this fucking dumbass biker. God, the dumbest one of all. The guy who they said, don't get your blood pressure checked. The place is getting overrun by zombies. He runs back to the fucking blood pressure checker. And of course, he's like, I gotta check my cholesterol right now. This is the time that I need to check it. Of course, he gets immediately overtaken by zombies. They rip his arm off while it's stuck in the blood pressure machine. And then subsequently gets ripped to shreds and entrails pulled out in front of him. A pretty cool death, but clearly the stupidest death of all of them.
And what always surprises me is that with cheesy effects, that it only takes one person to have like super retard strength to just instantly rip your arm off.
Yeah,
that's
nothing.
It. So
these people that can't break a glass window are now can rip your fucking arm out of its socket. I mean, it's impressive. It's impressive to say the least.
And the other impressive thing is that he can ride a bike with a giant sombrero on at the same time.
Yeah,
so
how does that even stand? Listen, I'm going to say this. Some of the things in this movie are not real. Okay, I didn't want to say it, but now I'm there, and the onion's been unpeeled. We can't undo it. So,
and the people that became famous for the one-shot zombie things, like the guy with the machete in the face.
Yeah. That's a pretty good kill scene. Good kill shot right there.
I'm surprised that the black lady in the African garb that was being molested wasn't a famous zombie since then, too.
Yeah, I feel like she could have done some good things.
Or my other favorite, Fat Guy in the Fountain.
Fat Guy in the Fountain's a good one. Mm. There's a really fucking sexy zombie, too. Have you seen the sexy zombie in this? Mm. There's this one chick, she's wearing like a Studio 54 like cut, so you can see her navel, and like it just covers her titties, and it's just all of her midriff.
How did I miss this?
She's a fucking hot-ass zombie walking around. She doesn't even have makeup. They were like, you're pretty hot. Can you just pretend to be dead for a second in this scene? I like it, too, in this scene. They also give up on painting the zombies blue. There's just some that are just regular color. They're like, we can't spring the blue paint for you.
And it was supposed to be gray, but it turned out too blue, and Savini was not happy.
So Peter then, Steven Flyboy, he drops down back to the main part of the elevator, and then when he's down there, he radios to Ken Forey, and the doors open up, and a half dozen zombies come in, and he gets into fucking mortal combat with these motherfuckers, gets bit multiple times while he's in there, but ultimately kills one that looks a lot like, who's the guy from Rescue Me? I can't remember. Dennis Leary. There's one zombie that he has mortal combat. Looks like Dennis Leary to the
same hairstyle.
Yeah,
yes.
Very, very similar.
You want to know what I hate about zombie apocalypse? I'll tell you this about zombie apocalypse. Smoking joint. I try to smoke cigarettes while I'm doing my zombie blogs, and it gets me pissed off. It gets me real pissed off. Thank you. That's my Dennis Leary.
So, Peter, hearing the gunshots and the mayhem and the fact that Stephen Flyboy is not answering the radio, he retreats to go tell Fran the bad news.
He's dead.
I heard his gun. Maybe he's all right.
Let me check the radio right now. He sounds all right. Oh, I'm sorry. He's being bitten.
So the mall is completely overrun. The marauders have been either killed or the ones that are left have retreated. And all of a sudden we see the doors to the elevator open with a whole bunch of zombies outside when we all of a sudden see that it's Steven within there. And he's full zombie. Yeah. And probably the second best makeup of all the zombies. He's super fucking blue. He's got a whole shit ton of blood on him, and he's still holding his little fucking pistol like really retardedly and by one finger. Like it can't, like a gun that just can't get off of his hand. That's pretty cool.
I just love the acting of the zombies when they realize he's like, oh, we were waiting for these doors to open.
No,
now it's a
there's
zombie.
There's nothing in here we can eat. That's bullshit.
We can't even eat his semi-warm corpse anymore.
So Flyboy is a zombie now, and because they retain certain, I guess, memories of where things go, he leads them to the fake wall where they're hiding out.
And you notice he's talking.
Yeah,
he's doing the bub.
So they break down the wall, and now they're headed for the little hideout upstairs where Peter and Fran are left. So they see the door open, and he tells Fran to just go.
What is it?
Here it is. Finally. Steven,
they're coming up. Go on, get out of here.
Oh, they destroyed the soundtrack on this.
Peter.
I said, get out of here.
And Steven comes in the door. And what's probably the best headshot of the movie. Boom. And I remember watching that over and over again, thinking, I think they just actually had to kill some guy to make this scene happen. It's a pretty amazing headshot, you know?
And if we try to tie in the two movies together, we're thinking, like, as a zombie, a fresh zombie, he's thinking, like, I can still go with these guys. They can still be my friends. Like, great, he just shot me in the head. I was trying to be friends with them. I wasn't going to eat them, but I still got shot in the head.
Thanks,
so.
Dick. So Peter locks himself in the little bedroom that they've made in the other room, and he takes a little two-shooter, like a little two-barrel gun.
Derringer.
And he's got it pointed to his head, ready to blow his brains out. Franny's on the roof. She's already got the chopper fired up. She's ready to leave.
And I hate to see, you can see that the gun is actually plugged, so it's really fake.
Yeah, it's not a very realistic-looking gun. But all of a sudden, Peter is about to blow his own brains out, and a zombie walks in the door. And he has a change of heart. He fucking... Which is, I think it's the cheesiest music of all of it. He shoots the zombie and then makes his way to the rooftop. Doing every type of karate that he knows, right? He knows...
Going full shaft.
Going full shaft, fucking shit up.
He gets to trade off a gun with a zombie.
Yeah, he has to leave one of his guns behind and
get
trade
his
it
M16
off.
Back.
And no, he doesn't grab the M16. The other guy just puts it down and then he takes the gun and he gets into the chopper.
How much fuel do we have?
Not much.
Well,
all right.
And that's
bring
the
on,
end.
Bring on the dead theme.
And that brings us to an end of 1978's Dawn of the Dead. No closure at all.
You know this is the Robot Chicken theme too, right?
Yeah, it is. It is the Robot Chicken
and
theme.
I hate to say the most absurd thing is that he's such a gentleman. He's like, no, I'd rather kill myself than go with this blonde bitch. You know? It's like... No, I don't really think I'm going to fuck her. Well, like, oh, that's right. I can fuck the hell out of her. She's still pregnant.
So. In a world with no black pussy, the large dick must kill himself.
Like, I just killed my best buddy who is left, but oh, well, I'll just have to bang his chick instead and cuck her. So,
I will say it's kind of a downer to see that there's no closure to find out what happens to Fran and Peter at the end of this film. But if I could give the remake of Dawn of the Dead any credit, which is that there is a nice bookend to it. They go to some island, which is the plan, and immediately they get to the island. It's completely overrun by zombies, which is fucking awesome. Yeah. I love that.
I would like to think that Fran is replaced with E.G. Daly, and that's where they run the whorehouse, and she pretends to be Carrie Fisher.
So, that makes sense.
You gotta sell that pussy!
So,
and he meets up with Michael Berryman.
Overall, probably my favorite zombie movie of all time, Dawn of the Dead, 1978. I own a shirt now. It is a, this is the movie that made the zombie genre what it is. I mean, I don't think you get The Walking Dead. I don't think you get millions of other fucking great films. You don't get Day of the Dead,
thing that could have made it better.
What's that?
It's some eye gouging from a good Fulci film. So.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
And you know what really bothers me is at the end of Fulci's zombie, they're walking across the Brooklyn Bridge. Why isn't there a zombie walk across Brooklyn Bridge? That is the perfect place for a zombie walk. So.
Yeah, or just some dude on too much methadone. Either way, you know, there's missed opportunities, oh, and you miss 100% of the shots that you never take. So, overall, great film, man. If you ever get a chance to meet any of the cast, hey, listen, they're getting older. This movie's 30 years old now, 31 this year. Go check it out, and I don't know, maybe we should do a special quality time broadcast from the mall itself on Dawn of the Dead weekend. Do you think that's a good idea, Jared?
Hell
should
yeah, I want to do it once, you know. I got to read, I'll even zombie-fy myself for that.
Do you think he goes pogo zombie?
I'll go pogo zombie. I'd rather be Fat Guy Fountain zombie.
Fat Guy Fountain zombie cosplay?
I'm definitely getting there.
I want to be the one zombie that looks like the nurse that looks like Tracy Ullman. That's who I want to be.
Which is the gun guy's wife.
Yeah.
And how many scenes did you see those three together? Is the fat bald guy, the nurse, and the guy with the gun?
That's a lot of
them. It's ridiculous.
A lot of them, yeah.
We remember the first time I watched that with my cousin, like, why the fuck are these three guys always together, even to the end of the film?
Because that's how they roll, man. That's just how they roll.
Yeah, George Romero definitely not the most pretentious film for the message of it, but it's still a great film.
It really is, from beginning to end. So, I really do love it.
It's not like Koyaanisqatsi Scotsy or anything. So.
I also like that while I used to think that this is a super communist pro movie, is that they do make out the point that they're like, oh yeah. Also, if you're a communist, you're a fucking mindless zombie. I like that. I like the idea that like that is the trade off. You live in a paradise where everyone's equal, but you're also a moron. So there's some good tales for it all.
I think Saturday Night Live made fun of the zombies in saying that they were all like followers of Kim Jong, what's his
Kim
name?
Kim Jong-un.
Now, who is the one from the other Korean country that like did mass marriages and whatnot? The guy who runs
Pol
like,
Pot?
I think he runs like the Washington Times or something. He owns Washington Times.
Mao? Stalin?
No. He's not totally commie, but he's still weird. So
okay, good talk. Good talk.
I can't remember his name, damn it. It's one of them gooker names.
Okay,
you know?
All right. hey, you can catch all things Eric Comedy at ericcomedy.com. It's Eric with a K, comedy with a C. The second Saturday shit show is free every second Saturday of the month. That's hosted by friend of the show, Mike Quinlan, and former host, Miss Kimberly Callahan. Reverend Moon. Check Reverend Moon down if you're trying to get mass married and have a heart attack. hey, while you're at it, look down at your player right now. Drop us a 5-star rating and some comments. We really appreciate it. Costs you nothing, means the absolute world to us. Jeremy, you got any shout outs and you want to take us out?
Yeah, definitely thank Adam Rutter for the Oddities Expo coming up on November 1st, and also for Rob Norton. Give me 10 seconds more. John Rodgers. Yes, thank John Rodgers again for making my week.